surpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth. It's seldom had root, even in 100,000 myriad calculus. Now we can see and hear, we can remember and accept it. I vow to meet the Buddha's truth, one with myself.
Wish the Buddha, wish the Dharma, wish the Sangha. Today we're doing the Avalokiteshvara festival, celebrating the Avalokiteshvara festival. Avalokiteshvara being a bodhisattva who was really the first to come to mind when we think of cosmic compassion. In Buddhism, there are many cosmic bodhisattvas who represent aspects of compassion and wisdom. And none so much, or as much as Kanzan or Avalokiteshvara. It doesn't matter the ideas we have in our heads about what cosmic compassion is or is not. Nearly as much as it matters, very simply, that we're able to open our hearts to it and seek and rely upon its help. Very smart, highly educated people can have more difficulty often with this because they have a bigger list of reasons why can have a better list of reasons why there isn't such a thing as cosmic compassion, or it's just something that some people imagine. And this is especially true nowadays when there's a very strong dominant point of view among the more intellectually inclined and more highly educated people, that views the universe as a big kind of mechanism without a without an intelligence and a compassion that's guiding it. People can be too smart sometimes and too educated sometimes for their own good. Because it's not nearly so difficult for people with less complicated things going on in their heads to recognize that there is that to which our hearts can open in time of need, and to which our hearts can give thanks when we catch glimpses of the way in which it is helping us. If we would recognize cosmic compassion, we need a place very close to home where we can start. When we recite the scripture of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, which is taken from the Lotus Sutra. We recite the lines, great compassion is with us, and we are searching for it within ourselves. There's no place closer to home than our own minds and our own hearts. Our own actions and our own motives. A person who finds within himself or herself the pure, unadulterated, utterly unselfish concern for the welfare of others has found Kanzeon within themselves. That does not make that person Kanzeon, but it does make that person wish to be more like Kanzeon in his or her actions. And it helps that person recognize Kanzeon in the world that he or she lives in. Her master used to say that the first thing that you're shown when you come to the temple is how to put your shoes straight. Outside the Zendo, the meditation hall. And indeed, it proves to be true, it is true, that you can see in something as simple as how someone puts their shoes, whether they're getting it about what compassion really is. It may be that such a thing, such a custom, develops for a number of reasons. It may be partly aesthetic, that it just looks nicer. As indeed it does look nicer, neater. But think if you have 5 or 10 or 20 or 50 people all taking the shoes off and scattering them every which way. Think how much harder it is to get in and out without tripping over someone's shoes. And if the aesthetic consideration exists in support of that far more important consideration, then that's very good and nice. But the important thing is to try to do things in a way that it doesn't make the world a more difficult place than it already is for other beings. Now, although that is not the whole of compassion by a long shot, that's the starting point of actually practicing compassion. First, do as little harm as possible. The recognition of Kanzeon, the ability to find and take refuge in and trust that cosmic compassion, and the ability to skillfully imitate Kanzan. That is, the effort to be more like Kanzan in one's own actions, go hand in hand. If we would find Kanzan in the world around us, we need to exercise our own capacity to be at least a little bit like Kanzan in our own daily lives.